tables, if you've got a Good News Bible, you might want to just get that ready, because we're going to read part of the passage for this afternoon from the Good News Bible, but it's also going to come up hopefully on the screen if we can get that PowerPoint working. It's called 3T Hebrews 11. But while we're seeing if we can get the words up on the screen, do you want to turn, if you've got a Good News Bible, while someone on the table, open it to Hebrews 11, and we're going to look at verses 8 to 16. I think quite a few of them are good news, aren't they? Yeah. Hebrews 11, and we'll read verses 8 to 16. And listen to this, everybody. It was faith that made Abraham obey God when God called him to go out to a country which God had promised to give him. He left his own country without knowing where he was going. By faith, he lived as a foreigner in the country that God had promised him. He lived in tents, maybe a bit like this one. Anyone think Abraham's tent looked a bit like this? No. Roger says no, so it probably didn't. He lived in tents, as did Isaac, Abraham's son, and Jacob, Abraham's grandson, who received the same promise from God. For Abraham was waiting for the city which God has designed and built. Anyone think this looks like that city? Yeah. Thanks. Suspend belief for a moment. Use your imagination, and maybe it could. Abraham was waiting for the city which God has designed and built, the city which has permanent foundations. It was faith that made Abraham able to become a father, even though he was too old and Sarah herself could not have children. He trusted God to keep his promise. Though Abraham was practically dead, from this one man came as many descendants as there are stars in the sky, as many as the numberless grains of sand on the seashore. It was in faith that all these people died. They did not receive the things God had promised, but from a long way off they saw them. Like that city in the distance. They saw them and they welcomed them and admitted openly that they were just foreigners and refugees, just tent dwellers on the earth. Those who say such things make it clear that they're looking for a country of their own. They didn't keep on thinking about the country they had left behind. If they had, they would have had the chance to return there. But instead, it was a better country they longed for, a heavenly kind of country. And so, God is not ashamed for them to call him their God, because he has prepared that city for them. We're going to leave the passage there for a minute, because these words are starting to give us, perhaps, a picture of what a life of faith for you and for me really looks like. And I wonder if at the beginning, if you were here right at the beginning, you might have been doing a bit of a brainstorm about living by faith. And what does that really mean, to live by faith? And I reckon if you look at your bits of paper, some of you will have written things like, oh, it's about not earning a salary and trusting God for where our money's coming from. Yeah, that might be part of it. Others of you might have written it's about taking risks. Others of you might have said, well, it's something to do with not really knowing where we're going to end up, but we're sort of stepping out in faith anyway on the things that God is saying. Some of you might have said it's about hearing what God says and obeying his call. I don't know, all sorts of ideas out there. And for some of us, when we think about living by faith, I imagine actually it's not always a very positive imagination that we have of what that's like. Perhaps we think it's a bit rickety and a bit scary and a bit unstable, like those structures we were building earlier. Perhaps we think it could all just fall down at any moment, because, you know, what if I'm hearing God wrong? And what if I think he said this and I step out in that direction and then actually he was saying something else and I've gone in the wrong direction and the steps that I'm taking, they don't feel so certain anymore. Perhaps some of us see the life of faith a bit like that. Perhaps others of us are just really inspired and fired up. And when we think about the life of faith, it just makes us want to go on an amazing adventure with God. And we feel so excited about it. And we've got these big dreams, these big ideas about what's possible and what can happen. And, you know, people that we talked about around our tables who've done a huge exploits for God. And we think, that's the life of faith. That's the kind of adventure that I'm going to embark on if I do it. I quite liked this quote. I was looking up different quotes from different people about what they thought the life of faith was all about. And there were loads of great ones, actually. There's some wonderful things people have said. But this one particularly amused me. And I wanted to share it with us by Lewis Carroll. Not famous necessarily for his theological quotes, but he said this: faith is putting all your eggs in God's basket and then counting your blessings before they hatch. I quite like that. Faith is putting all your eggs in God's basket and then counting your blessings before they hatch. And there's something in that that captures the taste of what I want to get over to us this afternoon as we think about living a life of faith. There's something in it because it speaks of trust, first of all, doesn't it? God's got a basket, and I'm going to entrust these very fragile eggs into that basket. You know, it's a bit of a risk, but it's trust because it's God's basket. He's going to take care of the things that we put in his hands, of the life that we hand over to him. And then there's a bit of joy in there, isn't there? There's an amusing imagery there with the chickens and the eggs and counting your blessings before they hatch. And it's kind of, it's fun and it's joyful. The life of faith is like that. And then there's a sort of total commitment, putting all your eggs in that basket, not keeping a few back just in case the basket breaks, but putting them all in. There's something about that diving in. That's what the life of faith is all about. It's all leaning on God and what he's saying to us and who he's calling us to be. And as we think about this passage today, I want us to try and be inspired to live a life of faith, whoever we are and whatever our circumstances. Whether you think your life is pretty humdrum and pretty normal and you think to yourself, well, what could God possibly want to do with me in my little old workplace, with my little old family, or in my little old home, in my little old neighbourhood? And it doesn't seem like those big dramatic exploits of faith that sometimes we think about. But still, we can be inspired this afternoon to live a life of faith because many heroes have done that before us, not least these ones that we've just been reading about in the passage and that the passage today goes on to tell us about. People like Abraham, people like Sarah, people like Isaac, people like Jacob, people like Joseph lived out a life of faith. And the reason they're written down for us in this chapter of Hebrews 11 is because God looked at their lives and it did him good. He says, I'm not ashamed to be called their God. And this afternoon, I want us to get hold of that, that your life can be the kind of life that God says, I want to shout your name from the rooftop. Denise, I am so proud to be your God because look at all the faith that is spilling out of your life. Or to say James or Ethan or Jade or whoever it might be, Eric or Samuel, I'm proud to be your God. I'm proud that you say that you worship me. I'm proud that people know we're associated together. Why? Because there's faith in your life, and as you're stepping out and walking by faith, even in the tiny things, as we're going to see, God is overjoyed and overwhelmed by it, and he's proud of you, and your name goes down in history. You may not be in, you know, the Bible as we have it today. It's a bit late for that now. We've got that revelation. But your name goes down in history, in the heavenly places. And when you enter in to that kingdom that's going to come in the future when Jesus comes again, when you enter in, did you know that there's going to be cheering and clapping? And people are going to be like, Dee's coming in. She's coming, everybody. Here she is coming into that heavenly kingdom. Look at all the beautiful acts of faith that she did. Look at all the things that are here because of what Dee did. Look at all the people whose lives were touched with Jesus' love because of who she is. There's going to be the Paul calls it an abundant entrance into the kingdom for those who live a life of faith, even in the small things, even in the day-to-day, who throw all their eggs in God's basket and start to rejoice and count the blessings that are coming because of who he is. So because of that, the life of faith is not always going to look like the kind of lives that people are living around us in the world, those who don't have faith. Our lives are going to look different, and they're going to be a bit strange and a bit nonsensical sometimes to other people as they look on. And I want us just to put up on the screen the next bit of the passage. And if you want to, you can just be looking at that for a moment. But here we have a list of people from the Old Testament that God is holding up as great examples of those who lived the life of faith. And they're going to start to help us see what that life of faith looks like in the day-to-day. So I was wondering if we had anybody here today, actually, in the room, who's got a good testimony of a life of faith. I'll just look out and I can say, oh, I see you. I see that hand over there. There's the man with the long grey beard and the long hair over there. Could you just tell us your name, sir?
I'm Abraham.
Abraham. Okay, wonderful. Tell us, what's your testimony? What's your example of the life of faith? Do you have one? Okay, amen. Well, do sit down, Abraham. Thank you. That's really helpful. The life of faith often has that kind of an element in it, doesn't it? That we're going to have to set out from our comfort zone and be called by Jesus into unfamiliar places. Now, maybe when we say that, we always think about geography. And we always think about, you know, God's going to call me to Timbuktu, or God's going to call me to Outer Mongolia, or wherever it might be. And we perhaps get a bit worried about that because we think we're not the traveling type. Well, sometimes it is that, and very often throughout history it has been. But I think there's something deeper than that. God is always calling us, if we live a life of faith, to get out of our comfort zone and to step out from what is familiar and ordinary in the surroundings that we live in. So when we look at the culture of our workplace and we see how everybody else engages with it, God is calling to you and saying, step out of that familiarity and get into something that might feel a bit uncomfortable and a bit conspicuous, but you're going to do life differently. And that when we look around at how other people are raising their families, that we're going to start to say, well, you know what, I'm not just doing it like that, the familiar way, the way that everybody thinks it should be done. I'm listening to God about what he has to say about my family, and things might start to look a bit different. You might start to do things that look a bit different, that look a bit crazy, and the Lord might lead you into new workplaces or new friendship groups that you didn't think you'd ever mix with before, new ways of serving, new gifts that he wants to usher out, new ways of approaching your work. I was thinking about a friend of mine who graduated from Cambridge at the same time as me, and he was going to go into this amazing career path, into a big kind of banking firm. But he was also a really super crazy radical Christian, and so he was thinking to himself, how does banking and being a Christian sort of add up? He wasn't really sure, and he knew he wanted to make a difference in the banking world somehow for Jesus, and he felt that God was calling him to a particular firm. So when we were all graduating, he was going for all his job interviews, and he made a decision. He prayed a lot about it. He said, Lord, I don't just want to go and be a banker and earn loads of money and have it all in the bank and feel really safe with my life and give a lot, you know, give a lot to charity, give a lot to church and do something nice like that. That looks like loads of people in the banking world. I want to look different. And he felt God said to him, okay, when you go to those interviews for that big banking firm, I want you to just talk about me. Basically, any question they ask you, I just want you to talk about me. Because I'm the most important thing in your life, aren't I? And my friend James said, well, yeah, okay. And he did. And in these interviews, there were several rounds of interviews for the company that he was applying to. And every time there was a bit where they would always sort of say, right, you know, you've got 5 minutes, tell us something you're really passionate about and why we should, you know, get into it. And he would talk about Jesus, and he would basically just share the gospel in those 5 minutes. And he did it in his first round of interviews and managed to get through to the second round. He did it again in the second round of interviews. And at the end of that, they said, look, we want to put you through to the third round of interviews, but can you just stop talking about Jesus, please, because it's, you know, it's a bit weird and it's not very relevant, and maybe you can think about something else. And he went away and he really prayed about it. He was like, Lord, you know, they've specifically told me they don't want to hear that again. And God said to him, no, I told you how to do this. If you want to go into this career by my calling, as opposed to the way everyone else does it, you're going to do what I say. And he said, okay, I'm going to do what you say, Lord. So he went in, third round of interviews. The moment came, okay, you tell us something you're passionate about or whatever. And he stood up. He started to preach the gospel. All the interviewers were looking at each other like this, you know, looking a bit kind of concerned. And at the end, they sort of said to him, look, why did you do that when we particularly asked you not to, you know? Maybe we can't really trust you to do what we ask you to do. Maybe you're not a good person to employ in this place. And my friend thought about it for a moment, and then God gave him this amazing, wise answer, and he just responded, and he said, you know what? He said, I'm actually only here applying to this firm because God has told me to. And he is the most important person in my life. Jesus is the person that I listen to. He's the one that I obey. And he's told me that I need to come and work for you guys and that I need to work really, really hard and that I need to do everything to the best of my abilities to bring glory to him. And he said, so you can actually count on me more than you can any of these other employees because I've got the God of all creation telling me to be here and do a good job. So you can trust me. And they were so persuaded by this answer, they gave him a really rather good job. And he went on every step of the way, at every opportunity, when it was appropriate and when it wasn't, to talk about Jesus. And lots of people became Christians because of him. And it was a very fruitful place. There was a bit of a mini revival in that place a few years back. Lots of people gathering for prayer at lunchtimes and, you know, a whole culture change in there. But this is what we mean by the life of faith. You're doing things in an unfamiliar way. You know, you're moving out of the comfort zone the way everyone else does it, and you're moving into, Jesus says, do it my way. Amazing things start to occur, and we can see those kinds of things. Now, is there another example of the life of faith out there? I think the man with the long grey beard's got something more to say. Abraham, did you have something else?
Later, I was challenged by God to give up the most precious thing I had, my own son. But when I did it, he gave me back more than I could ever have dreamed of.
Wow. That is another element of the life of faith. That sometimes we'll be called upon to give up things that are really, really precious to us. To make a sacrifice of them, if you like, and to lay them down for the Lord. Because then we start to really know what it means to rely on him. You know, the stuff that we count on, practically, emotionally, to kind of give our life meaning and purpose and joy, sometimes those are the very things we have to release into the Lord's hands as we walk the life of faith with him, because then we know what it means to truly lean on him and to truly find his joy and his purpose and his meaning in the things that we're doing. It's a trivial example compared to the giving of your own son whom you love, like Abraham's just shared. But there was a teenager over in New Life Congregation who told me that she was giving up for Lent. She decided to give up her phone and social media of all kinds for the whole of Lent, 40 days. And she just put it away, turned it off, not going to use it at all for that whole time and not going to access any of her social media accounts throughout that whole time. And she was really worried about how that was going to feel. She was talking to me about it. She said, but I really felt Jesus was saying that if I did that, I'd find I had more time on my hands. I was like, really? And she was like, yeah. And then she said, and now I've done it. Like, I just find myself, I'm praying all the time because I've got nothing else to do. So I'm praying. And I'm praying for all my friends and I'm praying for my family and praying for the stuff that's going on in school. And she wasn't particularly, you know, kind of wild, crazy, going for it Christian before. But somehow, taking that step of obedience opened up the door. She laid down something really important to her and amazing stuff started to happen in its place. So are there any more testimonies and examples out there of a life of faith? Oh, yeah, I see the lady with the scarf on her head. Did you have an example of the life of faith?
Yeah. I trusted God with my greatest desire to have a baby, although I knew it was humanly impossible. I gave that desire to him and left it in his hands, and he miraculously
fulfilled it. Wow, thank you, Sarah. Thank you for that powerful testimony. Sarah, Abraham's wife over there. And the life of faith trusts God for the impossible. It doesn't get hopeless and it doesn't get despondent, but it learns how to give the very deepest desires of our hearts into his hands and to trust him with the answers to those things. It's not about ignoring the deep desires of our hearts. Not about living in denial, not about trying to work things out with clever earthly solutions, but it's saying, Lord, you give me the miracle that you want me to have. You do the impossible in this situation. I heard a lady testify once who was infertile and she wanted a baby. And she started her testimony to a big group of Christians and we all thought that it was going to end up, and miraculously I conceived, I had this baby and now we're so happy today because God answered all our prayers. And actually, halfway through the story, we realised that wasn't the way it was going. She said, God did a miracle for me in my desire to have a baby. He suddenly planted in my heart an openness and a desire to adopt. And then she talked about the journey of adoption that she went on. And then it was such a moving story as she finished. She talked about the daughter that she now had adopted from a very, very difficult and painful previous experience, previous parenting situation. And she'd adopted this child and was giving it love. And she said, now I can't imagine any other child, whether it came from my own body or somewhere else, I can't imagine any other child could be loved more by me. And she said, and that is the miracle that God did in my heart. He gave me this gift of not only being a mother, but being able to be part of the redemptive work that God was doing in this child's life. And she was blown away by it. She said, I wouldn't exchange that miracle for the one that I had originally hoped for. I wouldn't exchange it in the world. God knew what he was doing with me, and he knew what he was doing with those desires. Sometimes the life of faith will be about that. Couple more testimonies before we close. I think there's a couple of people there. Oh, you look like you're related, maybe. Yeah, do stand up. Do tell us your example of faith.
God led us to dream big for the next generation. He gave us vision about how our children and grandchildren would serve him and called us to prophesy over them and pray them in his name.
Okay, that's good. Do it again. 1, 2, 3.
God led us to dream big for the next generation. He gave us visions about how our children and grandchildren serve and called us to prophesy over them and pray them into being.
Brilliant. Thank you, Isaac. Thank you, Jacob. That's really helpful. You know, a great testimony and an important element of the life of faith is that our prayers and our prophecies for our children, for the next generation, whether we're parents or not, we have a responsibility to invest spiritually in those who are younger than us, in those who are looking up to us for our example. However old we are, whether we are teenagers right now, there are young ones looking up to your lives, whether we are in middle age, whether we are in old age. And God says, in a life of faith, there is a responsibility to pray and prophesy over those who are coming up after you to follow him and to be a part of investing in their spiritual heritage. When I was a teenager, my friend, when he was 17 years old, he felt God told him that he needed to make sure that before he left his secondary school, all the people in that school had heard the gospel and heard what it means to know Jesus. So he did a brave thing. He went on his own to the headmaster. It was St. Olaf's School in Orpington. He went to the headmaster and he said, I want to do an assembly for every year group before I leave the school. And I want to tell them about Jesus. And the headmaster said, okay, you can do it. Now, my friend was a brilliant pianist and a songwriter, and he wrote this great gospel song about Jesus, and he went, and basically in every assembly for every year group, he would sing, talk about his song, explain the message of Jesus, and teach all of these younger ones about what it meant to know him. And I got the privilege of being part of that. He invited me to come and share my testimony as part of that. It was an amazing thing, and loads of people in his school started to respond to the gospel. Now, I think we've got time for one more testimony before we shut this down. Oh, yeah, I can see the man in the very brightly coloured coat. Yes, sir, you stand up. Give us your example of a life of faith. Hooray, yeah, thank you, Joseph. Do sit down, well done. You were so much living for the promised land, weren't you, Joseph, that you thought it was only right that you got your inheritance in it when it finally came even though you were long dead by the time the people of Israel actually went there. So they dug up your bones and brought you in. Nothing was going to stop you inheriting the promises that God had spoken over your life, not even death. And that is a hallmark of the life of faith. Nothing holds us back. We don't look back. We don't hold back. We don't give up. We hang on in faith right to the very end. And if we get to the end of our life and we still haven't got it yet, we say, take my bones with you, Jesus, because I know that answer's coming, if not in this life, in the one to come. So we're going to stop now and then just think about these things, these testimonies we've heard, and have an opportunity now to listen to the Lord together. And I think Samuel has got a song that he was going to play for us during this time. And I want us just to be quiet for a minute or two as the song plays, because I want us to reflect on our own lives. Are they the life of faith? And if not, how is Jesus wanting to encourage us into more of a life of faith? Is it going to be one of those ways like we've heard of, moving us out of our comfort zones, doing things differently to those around? Is he asking us to lay down something for him, to trust him with our deepest desires, to take some more spiritual responsibility for people who look up to us, and not let anything, even death, make us give up on the promises of God? As we listen to this song, let's also listen to the Lord and let him speak to us about our lives.